straightforward guy, you know, not a deep thinker, mm-hmm. but when you start asking him questions about the political scene,
he knew every damn thing.
He knew it, and he is very good at finessing his way around a reporter, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so I saw a side of Vic I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
And I was impressed.
He prides himself on having weekly media availabilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
And half an hour every week, no matter what. And he got a little calligraphy mm-hmm. thing from the reporter.
Yeah. Oh, left. Yeah.
He mentions that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he's great. You know, there's three things I'm going to do. I'm going to answer it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you I don't know, or mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you I can't answer it.
Yeah, there was
boom,
no
boom.
There was no bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
told like it was, and told like he saw it. And if that wasn't good enough, then fine. That's your problem, not mine, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. So, what do you want from me?
Well, so I start out all these with the non-Vicks. So,
okay.
Tell me how you met him, and you know, you eventually ended up with a great relationship mm-hmm. with him. But how did you run into this guy?
Yeah. Okay, let me. Well, first of all, like you, I spent a lot of time with students observing the legislature from. See, I came here in 74, so my first session would have been 75.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went down with the students in the spring of 75, and the big thing then was Trojan.
Yeah. You know,
and I got an interview with then Senator Betty Roberts,
mm-hmm.
and also with Ted Kulikowski.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was aware that Vic was the minority leader almost at the time. I think he's one of three.
One of six.
Okay, one of six.
Yes.
So, you know.
They actually have, the next time they were one of, he's one of seven, they have little Roman numeral gold badges.
So that was, you know, that era was the glory days of the legislature,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, because you not only had Betty Roberts there, Kulikowski, who was just a young whippersnapper, and I remember walking to his office, and he had the National Lawyers Guild symbol on his, in his office, you know, emblazoned. I mean, which, you know, I told the student that really means he's quite a radical dude. This is not, mm-hmm. you know, those are the people that, in the 20s and 30s, defended communists and often got blown
right.
up and
right.
Really dangerous people, and. How far he's gone, and Betty was very blunt and terse. She said, "Trojans, we're not doing a thing about Trojan. It's there,
mm-hmm.
And the environmental issues with it aren't going to be dealt with." She was very blunt, to the point, and
mm-hmm.
the end of discussion about that one, which was surprising to me. So I began to be aware of the legislature in 75, and Vic in about the same time, but realizing he was pretty lonely there because of the minority of six,
mm-hmm.
And
it turns out one of the members of the caucus never went to any meetings. He wanted to be the leader, and he was outvoted.
So I didn't know that. Yeah, so that was the era of Blumenauer,
mm-hmm.
Vera Katz,
mm-hmm.
all the legislators who one associates with the progressive era of Oregon politics
mm-hmm.
were there, who eventually went on to Congress or the U.S. Senate or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, governor or whatever. And of course, it was the time when Neil was mayor of Portland,
mm-hmm.
and so it was glory, the glory years,
mm-hmm.
So I was sitting up here at commencement in 76, and I had Paul Phillips in my classes,
mm-hmm.
Paul had helped set up commencement in the gym that weekend. And so I caught him out of coming out of the gym just by chance. But I've been thinking about, you know, interns. And I'd already had two interns, and one for Lassacon and one for a state legislator back in Pennsylvania. So I was beginning to build my internship cadre and looking for potential students. And so I had my eye on Paul because, you know, he was, even though I beat him up on his writing, which actually Nancy did most of it later on, which is probably a good choice because Paul can't write worth shit. But I knew that given his personality, he'd be perfect as an intern with the right legislator. And I suddenly thought, well, why not Vic? You know, go for the minority leader, but a guy who is from Tigard. Paul was from Tigard. And so I started talking. I talked to Paul then, and he said, well, let me go talk to Joe Story because he was a double major in poli-sci and econ. And so he went and talked to Joe, and Joe said, it's fine with me. I got no problem with it. And so Paul said, yeah, how do we do it? And I said, well, let's go down to Salem and meet with this, also arrange a meeting with with the senator through his secretary, and we'll interview. He'll interview you, and we'll talk with you. Turned out that for some reason I couldn't go. Something up here prevented me from going. Something, you know, some stupid faculty. I don't know what it was. So Paul went down on his own, which actually was great because. Walks in the like he told the story, you know, at the celebration, walks in the office and, you know, his secretary warns Paul that, you know, he doesn't like interns, never had a good experience. And she had told me that when I talked with her. And I said, well, I've got a young man who I think Vic just might like and might give him a chance. And, but we'll, you know, whatever, you know, the interview will be worth it. And if nothing comes of it, you know, that's okay, but you give it a chance. And so, you know, and so Vic did, and Paul told the story, you heard it. So I got to know Vic through Paul. I don't think I knew Vic one-on-one until that point. I was aware of Vic, but I don't recall actually meeting with students with Vic. I might have, but I just don't recall. So it was really with through the internship with Paul. And of course, Paul, all my students, you know, like, you know, all internship students, they write a weekly diary. And of course, then it wasn't email. It was weekly sent through the mail. And so I was reading the stuff that he was doing for Vic. And I sort of got to know Vic sort of at a distance. But of course, I was reading the papers and aware of what was going on in the Republican Party and with Vic, et cetera. And so as things transpired after the legislature, and the other thing is that I had another student who was down there, an African-American woman student, Sharon Steen, who is the same class as Paul, but 30 years old. She'd gone to UO, dropped out, came back, found Pacific by some mysterious circumstance. And so Sharon was working for Stephen Kefouri. So while Paul was working for Vic, Sharon was working for Stephen. But they were good friends. They'd been in class together. They liked one another. Sharon is easy to like. She's not a, over-the-top partisan. And of course, Stephen was the marijuana guy, so she had a hoot because the Canadians were coming down interviewing Stephen. And, what is this about marijuana you like so much? You know, and so Stephen had a lot of press, and he was just a young stud. And of course, I had known Stephen at Whitman. He and I were in the same class together in 1964, after our graduating class. And but I wasn't good friends. He was a fraternity guy. I was independent. But we knew one another, and he was politically active, just like I was on Whitman's campus. So I knew him. And so through Paul and Sharon, Steve, and Vic, I got to know, you know, things going on in those two offices, and again, taking students down there and then having other internships down the road. So I got to know Vic. And then when Paul left the internship, Vic hired him on as his driver.
Right.
And drove him literally around the entire state of Oregon during the campaign.
Yeah.
And then of course by that time I was watching the Republican primary contest between Vic, Tom, and
Roger Martin.
And
Vic Atia can never win this race.
That was just fascinating as heck.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one thought Vic could win it.
Yeah.
But of course he did. Mm-hmm. And not only that, he won the governorship incredibly. Once that happened, then Paul ended up as the ombudsman for Vic, the old McCall, our colleague in the profession, was Tom's first ombudsman. The PSU professor, who became a commentator on K2 for years.
Oh, Marco Haggard.
Marco Haggard.
Yeah.
And so, Paul. Yes, Marco Haggard had been the first ombudsman, and then Paul became the deputy ombudsman, mm-hmm. and then he hired Sharon to be his assistant. And Sharon told me, well, the reason he did it, when he went to the prison, he was very uncomfortable. And so he figured if they had a black female
mm-hmm.
going there in the prison, they'd all behave themselves.
Yeah.
And of course, Paul will deny that story, but that's what Sharon told me.
Right.
And so the two of them worked together in that office. So I got to know Vic at that point through Paul and Sharon, and mm-hmm. and then again taking students down to the Salem. He was and it was really through at that point when he was governor that I really got to know him mm-hmm. Because of Denny Miles. Mm-hmm. Denny, like you said earlier, mm-hmm. Denny was Vic was very accessible to everyone, whether it was mm-hmm. the media, legislators, the general public, or students.
Yeah.
And so all I had to do was call Denny Miles and say, hey, Denny, I'm bringing a group of students down, taking poli sci, staying local. We'd love to talk with the governor and love to talk with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, they set it all up. We got a nice tour of the innards of the
mm-hmm.
governor's office. We got to sit in the ceremonial, not just the ceremonial office, but the working office on mm-hmm. the side and talk with Denny and then the governor
mm-hmm.
And other staff people. So I got to know, the governor and his staff, particularly Denny Miles, personal relationship, professional personal mm-hmm. relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always accommodating, as was the staff, particularly Denny. So that's really where it all sort of mm-hmm. began. I guess my main sense of Vic as a governor, watching him in the legislature as well as seeing the issues as they broke down. As you know, the big deal at that time was whether Oregon was going to pass its version of Measure 5.
Right. Came up again and again.
Again and again.
Yeah.
And that was just, from my perspective, just death. And I was hoping we would never replicate California's mm-hmm. Prop 13. And largely because of Vic, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, by 91, we did. Five times, the fifth mm-hmm. time it was the charm, unfortunately. But so Vic was able to fend off Measure 5
mm-hmm.
by showing some real leadership ultimately, as you know, raising taxes for 1 year
yeah.
to 10% yeah. across the board. And so he was willing to go against all conventional wisdom in the Republican Party
mm-hmm.
and bite the bullet. In the process, he got rid of the unitary tax, which mm-hmm. you know I wish he hadn't, but mm-hmm. he did. And there, and but aside from that, he you know, he was out going all over the world,
mm-hmm.
Showing that Oregon really was open for business, as he would say. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't this pandering. It was building relationships in Europe,
yeah.
in the Middle East, in Japan, in the soft sell approach that only Vic Catia knows how to do.
Yeah.
And just sort of showing the flag quietly, but working very hard at it, you know. And so it was a combination of his ability to work with a very partisan mm-hmm. Democratic legislature.
He was in the minority during his entire legislative career,
yeah.
and he had Democrats during his entire gubernatorial
yeah, yeah,
career.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And you know, that part, when I thought about it, and I'm sure I made public commentary about that mm-hmm. on the radio at that time, and I, but my take on that was, Vic was really a good governor, willing to make some very courageous decisions, but also willing to extend the hand, because mm-hmm. he knew what it was to be in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And in some sense, he did. Again, the man did not have a huge ego.
Mm-hmm.
His goal was to get things done,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily get credit for it.
Yeah. You know?
And because he'd been in the minority, that he sort of knew what it was like to be on the outside,
mm-hmm.
And knew how important it was to reach out to whoever he needed to reach out to, that he was able to do that in a way that most governors really don't do or can't do
mm-hmm.
by dint of their personality, their ideology, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first thing that Vic said, one of the first things he said among the Republicans he first made after he won the election. There was a lot of talk about cleaning the Aegean stables in Salem.
Right.
You know, getting rid of the pointy heads. And Vic made it very clear, no, these are public servants. They have served their state well. I'm not going to summarily, you know, cut heads, chop heads,
right.
whatever the term is. You know, if we need to make changes, we'll make them in a very deliberative, mm-hmm. conscientious way. But I basically trust the people behind the scenes who do the day-to-day work of this state. And I think generally, from my experience as a legislator, they do a good job. So we're not gonna take a Sith and cut heads. You know,
right.
we're gonna and that's, to me, that really was an important statement, because that, number one, he knew, as a state legislator, having been in countless hearings, mm-hmm. he knew who the bodies were.
Right.
He knew who he could trust. He knew probably who he couldn't trust. But he was willing to say publicly, which I don't think any governor really since that time has ever said, that no, you know, you can trust the people in the bureaucracy, and you know, they're trying to do the best job they can, and we're going to work with them, mm-hmm. and we're going to try to work with the legislature and do the best job we can for Oregon, get on with the business of Oregon, whether it's
yeah.
you know, bringing business to Oregon, improving public policy, you know, whether it's schools, the tax structure, whatever. But it was sort of that reassurance that he knew, you know, what government was about. He knew that inflaming polemical rhetoric was not the answer,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to go about the job quietly of doing the business of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that sense of his commitment to public service, his belief in the value of government, and then ultimately his facing down a bad economy,
mm-hmm.
And then going for a tax cut to try to smooth it over to prevent Measure 5, something worse from coming down the road, and then in the process building up Oregon's economy. It's those quiet things that he did
mm-hmm.
that I think make him probably, you know, probably the best governor we've had since Tom McCall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no doubt about that. We haven't had a governor like him since
mm-hmm.
Vic was in office. So I think, you know, he faced some significant challenges, but he passed that test because mm-hmm. he was a genuine article. You know, mm-hmm. there was no facade, there was no bluster, there was no phoniness about Vic. You know, the Vic you saw in his office as a state senator, the saw as a governor, you saw with on the campaign trail was the same Vic. Mm-hmm. There wasn't two faces of Vic or three faces of Vic, mm-hmm. which I cannot say for any other governor. You know, since then they all have multiple faces they present depending on the audience in which they're from.
Yeah, it's interesting talking to Vern Duncan yesterday because he served. Because the superintendent of public instruction was sworn in a week before the governor, mm-hmm. he was at Tom McCall's last meeting.
Oh.
So McCall, Straub, Atiyah, Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
And his impression was with Straub, great guy, but they come to whatever agreements and uh-huh. then the staff would do something uh-huh. completely different.
Yeah.
Atiyah, what you saw was what you get.
Yeah.
And staff would help you.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. And with Goldschmidt, you never saw the guy.
No,
he just was a governor in absentia.
Yeah, right.
That was it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that certainly was as an outsider. Mm-hmm. That was my view of Goldschmidt. But I'd worked for him in his office as mayor of Portland on an ex Lilly grant in 1980-81, mm-hmm. doing a community analysis study of. Northwest districts, Corbett, Terwilliger, and Inner Southeast, mm-hmm. for practically a year, and I did a report for Alan Weber, who was one of his top three mm-hmm. people. And so I was in that office all the time, of course, during the time when he was fucking around with that girl.
Yeah.
Of course, nobody knew. A lot of people knew later and mm-hmm. spent 20 years pushing under the rug. So Neil is, outside of Bill Clinton, Neil is the most brilliant politician I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. He also thought conceptually. He was, as Alan Weber used to say, he's four steps ahead of us all. You know, mm-hmm. we're talking. And I used to, went to lunch with them, but I'd go out to lunch while they were going out to lunch, and three or four of the staff people, and you know, they were talking, chatting, and Neil was always five concepts ahead of all of mm-hmm. them. These were sort of five. This is Angus Duncan, Alan Weber, and I've forgotten who the third person was. And so he had a top staff,
mm-hmm.
top staff, all sort of oddly bright people, but he was the brightest of them. It was clear. Mm-hmm. And they respected him. So I never understood why he ran for governor.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't envision him being governor because he would be bored. He couldn't sit still. When I presented my report to him, he stood up for the entire 45 minutes in his office. He had ants in his pants. He couldn't mm-hmm. stand still.
Mm-hmm.
I think he heard what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But, he just had so much energy that, you know, I couldn't envision him being governor. Of course, now we know he wasn't much of a governor. And, in fact, I've heard from a very reputable source that his appetite for women didn't end with that young woman, tragic mm-hmm. moment, and it extended to people in his staff as mm-hmm. governor. And so Neil, brilliant politician, but like Bill Clinton, flawed,
mm-hmm.
humanly flawed. And and it's hard for me to understand it because he had a great wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they came out to campus to debate Norma Paulus, and mm-hmm. I went over afterwards to the gathering with them in his car, and I just couldn't believe what came out later on. I couldn't fathom.
Mm-hmm.
But this was by the time we'd already gone through the Clinton stuff. So I said, now I get mm-hmm. it. But you're right. Vic, there was a consistency, and there was no, and so when you worked with his staff, I'm sure, as you say, and as the senator said, there was no finessing. If they made a commitment, they stuck to it, and the question is, how do we get from point A to point B? That was the sense I had of how you dealt with Vic. With Neil, there was no attention span whatsoever, no real interest, and he was a disappearing act, much as the current governor is on many issues. I think Kitzhaber is, will pick and choose issues. It's PERS this year, it's higher early education. Next, it's back in the day when he was Senate president, it was salmon recovery But at any one point, he's sort of a one-trick pony, one issue and that's it. But I remember when I was doing it in my first, my sabbatical in Salem, learning how to become a citizen lobbyist, I sat in front of Bill Bradbury's office for lunch, and I got to know one of his assistants who turned out to do had done press release for Carter during that era, during the campaign, but not during his presidency. And then she ultimately started doing press stuff for Clinton. So I got to know Clinton when he came to Salem. I sat in and helped her set up the room at the Salem Golf Club where he gave a speech to lobbyists and selected legislators, leaders. And so, I had a real respect for Bill Bradbury because he really, as a majority leader, worked really hard to deliver the goods. Whereas Kitzhaber, just on the other side of the hall from Bradbury, was often not even there. He would just disappear. So, again, the difference between Vic is, he was there. He was there 24/7 as governor. He wasn't a part-time governor. And he was there dealing with the issues, whatever they turned out to be, and he wasn't going to pick and choose. He would just deal with what he had to confront. So I think, I think Vic, like you said, and like other people have told you, what you saw is what you got. And I think that genuineness is what, ultimately enabled him to work with the opposition party and with the people of Oregon. And throughout his life, I think that was sort of, the article, and I think, unlike his successors, there was an attention to detail. There was an attention to commitments, and you knew that if he said something, he would follow through on it.
Found out yesterday in the budget meetings, he said there needed to have a calculator in front of him.
Well,
hear the numbers.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, he was a businessman.
Yeah.
He knew the importance of the bottom line.
Yeah.
But he also knew as a businessman the importance with his brothers and family that a business, maybe, I haven't thought about this, so this is a new idea. Maybe he is what he is because he understands the concept of family and a family business and realizes in some sense government, is a family, an extended family of voters, of partisans, of lobbyists, of the public, and you all have to work together if you're going to make this work. And that means, that requires you to subdue your ego, to put your ego in check. And that's something most politicians can't do by their very nature. And so maybe he was a fiscal conservative, and he wanted to keep track of the money we're spending, but I think in part that's because he knew from his experience with the family business that you're accountable to everyone. What you do affects everyone in the family business.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I've never bought a rug from the Atiyah brothers. I've
right.
walked in there a couple times to see Vic after he was left the governorship to chat with him. But my image of the Atiyah family, and I have a former colleague of mine whose granddaughter married into the family,
mm-hmm.
and every time she told me about, you know, visiting the Atiyahs for Thanksgiving dinner, the sense I got was integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that marriage ended up, sadly, in divorce, but
mm-hmm.
that's not Vic's fault
mm-hmm.
or anybody else's. You know, I know that from
mm-hmm.
Jason and Jilfie's experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, the, again, I think he understood the concept of how to run a business and a family business, but it also, my image of it, it's always been a quality enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been any hit of scandal.
Yeah.
The advertising that done is very tasteful.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, so you know, I think again, there's a sense of quality,
mm-hmm.
and that's in, that he embraces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got, you know, when you got someone who's a straight shooter, someone for whom there's little, if any, finesse, someone who is committed to public service in the broadest, most positive sense, but who understands that ultimately Oregonians are a family or extended family,
mm-hmm.
I think that really sort of sums him up
mm-hmm.
from my perspective
mm-hmm.
as I think about it with you.
Let's switch to a couple of specifics.
Sure.
Tell me about the unitary tax.
Okay, the unitary tax, at the time it was in effect, taxed the worldwide global wealth of all Oregon's corporations. And of course, they hated it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Vic was doing everything he could. So unlike, you know, the current era where we're through SIPs and other devices, you know, giving all kind of tax breaks to Intel and Nike, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
At that point,
I just ran into Ted Kaluri this morning.
Okay.
And he was in the legislature when they did that.
Okay.
And he's just shaking his head.
Yeah, yeah. So at that time, you know, the corporate Oregon, which in some sense was more prominent than it is today in a strange
mm-hmm.
way, because we had Weyerhaeuser. You know,
we had actual headquarters
yeah,
there.
Yeah, headquarters
yeah.
there. So
yeah.
we had some real heavyweights.
Yeah.
You know, and they were locals.
Yeah.
They weren't these international people, didn't
right.
give a damn. But this was really on their agenda. And being a Republican, it was a natural for Vic to say, okay, yeah, you know, we probably do need to get rid of it. But I don't know the negotiations behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
but my vague memory of the press coverage, and we had very good press coverage
mm-hmm.
of the legislature then, unlike we do today. And
mm-hmm.
our, by the way, our chapter in the book is still as relevant as it ever was.
Yeah,
and
the whole book is still relevant.
And so my memory is that, again, he was trying to fend off Major Five.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to recruit business to Oregon
mm-hmm.
And keep business in Oregon. And so I think to him, the logic of getting rid of the unitary tax made every bit of sense, because it was a thorn in the side of appealing to not only keeping business here, but attracting more business here.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, that made sense. And if in the process you increase the business economy's robustness here in Oregon by growing, you know, new corporations, new entities, new economic growth to Oregon, then we can fend off Major Five, and we'll have the resources to do what we need to do, whether it's health and education stuff, you know, K through 12, higher ed, environment, whatever, building roads, whatever. So I think in his logic, I think it made every bit of sense. And obviously it did to the Democratic legislature who passed it. He got through the Democratic legislature.
His feeling on that is that they didn't really know what they were voting on. And
gee, that doesn't surprise me a bit.
So, and he and Denny, I don't know how central Denny was to the whole thing, but Denny remembers this vividly. And Vic hammers it, you just sell it as economic development.
And
people didn't really understand.
Yeah.
And it's kind of obscure.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
But they did.
It
but is. Unitary tax, it fits on a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he specifically did it in the special session so it wouldn't be hooked to budget negotiations.
Right.
So why do you think it was a bad idea?
Well, I don't think it's a bad idea. Because since that time, we have not been able to figure out a way of funding basic resources, whether it's human services, higher education, or K through 12, and sufficiently so that to keep up with the challenges. And so if we had, if that was back or some version of us back or something had replaced it, then I think we would be in a much better position than we are as a state. I mean, we are, you know, in terms of higher education, we are
at least the 45th or below.
Four out of five kids in poverty.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, I don't need to do the litmus test. So I think, you know, I think we'd be in a much better position than we are, although, again, the downside would be maybe we wouldn't have the Intels and Nikes here. On the other hand, look at all the people that left us, despite that. And so I think it deserved at the time. I understood the politics of it at the time. I understood even the economics of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as I recall, in the campaign that Vic ran against Ted Kulongowski, Ted's major goal was to save jobs in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic just hammered him because, and Ted couldn't come up with a defense.
Yeah.
Ted had been in support of supporting Oregon jobs, and there was a particular bill that was associated with that, and I can't remember the name of the bill right now. But Vic just hammered him and hammered him. And eventually, Ted just gave up on it. He wouldn't defend himself, wouldn't defend his record, wouldn't defend the concept, wouldn't go to bat for organized labor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Ted Kulongowski that I didn't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
But what did Ted learn from that? Well, Ted learned from that that you can't beat up on corporate Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So when he did run the next time, he became, you know, one of these blow-dried corporate Oregon guys who believes in SIPs, believes in giving, you know, corporate Oregon everything they want and more, because you got to grow, you know, you got to grow the economy by growing the business climate. It's sort of, you know, it's not unlike what Bill Clinton did as a new Democrat. You know, it's grow the economy and trickle down will do. It's like Reagan. It's like they all got Reaganized. So my opposition to the unitary tax is that it denied us of the resources, not then, but subsequently in generations over the last 30, 40 years that we desperately need to be the kind of state we claim and we want to be in, and the kind of state that Tom McCall had said we should be. But then again, Tom failed miserably at tax reform too. So I don't blame, you know, but I think your comment that the legislature didn't know what they were doing, I think you're probably right, and which says more about them than it does about Vic. But it also shows that behind the facade of Mr. Nice Guy, Vicketty is a very sharp politician.
Oh yeah,
you know, he's sort of the iron fist in the velvet glove when he has to be.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think he's mean-spirited like Nixon, but he knew exactly what he was doing. And if those fools in the legislature were going to not do their homework, well, that's their problem. It's not his.
Yeah.
And that's what I saw in the campaign against Golenkowski and the campaign against Tom McCall. Vic knew exactly what he was about, and he stuck to his guns, and he won.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's, you know, so, you know, that's, again, and I saw that in the interview we did of him. You know, I realized at the end of that, I'm PhD, and I was taken to school
mm-hmm.
by a very savvy governor.
Mm-hmm.
Brings us into his office, lets us tape record it.
Mm-hmm.
No rules of engagement, mm-hmm. no bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Turn on the mic, I'll answer your questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept trying to get him into a corner, mm-hmm. and I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
He was so good about, you know, not evading the questions, but giving his answer to my
right.
rhetorical question, that I realized afterwards, as I told my student, John Jewett, you know, this is one smart governor.
Mm-hmm.
He's a lot smarter than people think he is.
Mm-hmm.
And if a PhD can't quarter him, I understand why the legislature has trouble with
mm-hmm.
him. You know, he knows exactly what he's about. And that's to his credit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I respected that in him. Mm-hmm. I came out of that interview with two thoughts, respecting him more than I ever had politically and intellectually,
mm-hmm.
but also realizing how hard it is to be a journalist
mm-hmm.
and how hard it is to ask the tough questions of a smart politician.
Yeah.
And so I came out of that being humbled,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty hard to do if you're if you're a professor type. At least you don't like to admit it.
Right.
But also respecting him even more.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the answers he gave were logical or perfectly understandable, but you knew behind the answers there was, you know, he was thinking this through.
Mm-hmm.
There's little wheels going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to, you know, get through to those wheels.
Yeah.
And I was impressed. That mm-hmm. was an hour, unscripted, no notes. That's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to me about the 1982 reelection campaign. He goes into it as an underdog, and he wipes the electoral table with Ted Golenkowski.
Yeah.
The thing that really comes out from the Atiyah side and from the Golenkowski side is the Atiyah people intimated that Golenkowski was dangerous for Oregon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to chase that down, but mm-hmm. I've heard from both sides, and, you know, the Atiyah people put out a series of radio ads that lasted for 7 days
mm-hmm.
and got the most, you know, what we teach is the mm-hmm. most amazing free publicity in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Willie Nelson ad
yeah.
of that
yeah.
campaign.
Yeah.
It just took on its life
right.
on its own, and off you
right.
go.
Yeah.
And then you had people like Bob Packwood who wrote a letter saying, yes, Ted Golenkowski is dangerous.
Yeah.
it's
yeah.
not his policies.
Yeah.
It's him.
Yeah.
So take me through that campaign as you remember it. I'm going to talk to Ted.
Yeah.
But
I'm not sure I can do a very good job of that. But let me, I'll attempt it.
It's only 32 years ago.
Yeah, only 32 years ago. Okay. Again, I think what you described is exactly what I remember happened. And basically what Vic and the campaign did is they framed Ted
mm-hmm.
as a labor goon.
Yeah.
Okay.
They chose the word union lawyer rather
yeah.
than labor attorney. Or
yeah.
Something like
yeah.
That. Yeah.
And so they did exactly what Atwood did to Dukakis.
Mm-hmm.
They framed him in such a way that by the time the election was over with, no one would have voted for Ted Golenkowski, including his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I think at a certain level, Oregonians don't trust labor unions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are a lawyer by profession, when you're a lawyer by profession, when your career has been always associated with being a liberal progressive lawyer, remember the mm-hmm. first impression mm-hmm. I have was the National Guild.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ted was framed by Vic in a very smart way, and Ted could not figure out a way out of that label.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is that Ted, being a liberal legislator in a liberal legislature, was not, unlike Vic, was not able to understand how to defend himself against an attack because he'd never had to defend himself.
Right.
He's always been part of the majority. He's always been part of the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
He sees himself that guy. And I think Ted is a good guy,
mm-hmm.
In terms of being a human being. I think he was a terrible governor. And it really began with that campaign because he failed to stand up for his values. He should have been willing, it's easy for me to say, but he should have been willing to go down with the ship and say, I believe in organized labor. I believe that workers have rights. I believe that Oregon will be better with stronger public employee unions, blah, 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 and with workers who have rights to protect their jobs,
mm-hmm.
Regardless. He would not defend his record. He would not defend his previous positions. He simply reacted. He tried to dance around it. He would not respond directly to the Attia campaign charges.
Mm-hmm.
And that failure, I think, is why he lost the election. Now, maybe he would have lost it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But had he been willing to fight the fight on his own terms and say, that's who I am. So what?
Mm-hmm.
This is the choice you have. You have a choice between a conservative candidate and you have a choice between a progressive candidate and in Oregon, we have a long history of progressive candidates. Ted could have pulled out Tom McCall,
mm-hmm.
and done a Tom McCall deal on Vic. I don't know that it would have succeeded because
mm-hmm.
Tom was history by then. No one,
voters
come and go. But my sense is that Ted was like the deer caught in the headlights.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wasn't used to defending basic bedrock Democratic Party progressive values, which he had taken for granted and embraced during his political life as a legislator, and that he really couldn't figure out how to respond.
Mm-hmm.
He was not used to being on the defensive.
Mm-hmm.
He was not used to being in the minority. And I think a part of it is probably just sheer arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you assail my integrity? How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
And he never said that. That's not his style. But I think Vic caught him off guard.
Yeah.
It's like a basketball team that runs its system, and the other guy is constantly having to adjust to it and can't figure out how to adjust to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ted, again, just wasn't able to figure out how to defend himself on his record when I think he should have and he could have.
Mm-hmm.
But that then that subsequently leads to when he did run the second time, he was a very different Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
He's a corporate Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And that really sets the tone for, of course, Neil really sort of laid that foundation as governor. And then Ted, walks into it. Barbara, I think Barbara Roberts was not that kind of governor and
mm-hmm.
was not that kind of candidate. My problem with Barbara is she allowed Patricia McCaig to run the governor's office. And that was really offensive.
Yeah.
And I've known Barbara personally for years, and both before and after. I was actually working with Barbara at Merrillhurst on her degree.
Mm-hmm.
I was her professor.
Mm-hmm.
I would meet with her once a month to go over stuff
mm-hmm.
with her. And and so I really like Barbara. I think she's a gem. She and Vic are sort of personality-wise very similar. They
mm-hmm.
come from, you know, modest circumstances. They're, you know, what you get is what you see. They're, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're very affable people. They're likable people. I think they both like, you know, like people generally. And she was dealing, and she, like Vic, faced the ultimate challenge of Measure Five as
yeah.
she became governor.
Yeah.
And then had to face Frank's
mm-hmm.
impending cancer and death, which I think really took it out of her,
mm-hmm.
which is why she didn't run. And then Neil Zonga runs dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, I don't see Barbara as a corporate liberal, but I think all the other Democrats that followed suit are corporate liberals. And I think in some sense, Vic taught him a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't run against business in Oregon. I've got to somehow be pro-business.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're not smart enough to figure out how to be pro-business without being anti-labor, or pro-business without necessarily saying we're going to raise taxes, then you've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Your goose is sort of cooked.
Mm-hmm.
You're cornered.
Mm-hmm.
And, but again, Vic gets rid of the unitary tax, imposes a 10% surcharge for a year, very smart,
mm-hmm.
And fans off Measure Five,
mm-hmm.
and then moves on. See, my argument has been, and ever since that all happened, is look, Vic did the unitary tax, he did the 10% surcharge to fend off Measure Five. Well, Measure Five has happened, folks.
Mm-hmm.
We need a new revenue source.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care whether it's some form of the unitary tax or a progressive income tax or getting rid of corporate PERS as well as individual PERS, but we need more resources. Kitzhaber has now kicked the can three times and he's
mm-hmm.
going to kick the can again. There's nothing I'm reading in him that tells me he's going to...
Oh, he told us he's going to have a tax thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We won't hear boo of it until sometime after the election.
Yeah, sometime after the election.
Quite frankly, that's too late.
Yeah, it is too late. So,
yeah.
So I think Vic, you know, faced the demons of our economy and did the best one could do under those
mm-hmm.
very difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And he built the economic base that's now Oregon.
Yeah.
For which he can take credit. But I think now we have a whole different set of problems.
Yeah.
And we need to be adults about dealing with them. You know, the past is the past. Vic got us through some very tough times. Fine. Let's move on, folks.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see anybody instead of moving on. I mean,
yeah.
I see, you know, I go down to, I went down to a Connect Oregon hearing
mm-hmm.
Where you had 300 people, half of them dressed in red T-shirts showing their opposition to coal trains and oil trains
mm-hmm.
going up the Columbia River. And it was very clear, you know, the commission was not hearing any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran through all the legislators, all the local officials for 2 hours before they let the little people speak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's not even how legislative hearings operate.
Yeah.
Legislative hearings will say, well, if you've traveled 50 miles or further, you get first.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do the initial presentations. But no, for two
mm-hmm.
hours we had to sit there and listen to Betsy Johnson. Barf.
Mm-hmm.
We all, you know, these are people who've had, you know, insider cracks at this whole thing for months, for a year. So we heard. So again, this is an insider's game, and the people of Oregon really aren't counted in this process. But unfortunately, the people of Oregon don't understand what's going on
mm-hmm.
And why. Their classes are too big. the University of Oregon. You know, you, when your kids go there, they may or may not have dorm space. But, well, we got the best football team in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
We got the most spectacular night arena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these wonderful things for which the average student can't get access to.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, the latest is the business community in Oregon, and Sunday's Oregonian op-ed piece, I've forgotten who wrote it, said, well, you know, we really need to do what the University of Washington has done and what the state of Washington, invest in our future, invest in research and development, invest in education. Well, duh.
It's been a fight here since the 1920s.
Yeah, but I think in some sense it goes back to that subtitle of our book, the book, Progressive versus Conservative Populists.
Yeah.
At some point, the conservative populists have become such a powerful element in Oregon politics within the legislature as well as just in public opinion, that the progressives have not been able to make the case for a return to a progressive income tax or some other form of progressive taxation. I don't, it could be the sales tax, it could be an occupational business tax. You know, there's all kinds of ways of getting more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But despite the fact that Portlandia rules with Washington County's help in any statewide election, the ability of Oregon to meet the challenge of revenue is I think stalemated because we have these two basic forces in Oregon that are irreconcilable.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing though is that when Measure 5 passed, as you probably remember, Measure 5 lost in the other Oregon.
Yeah, no, Portland is, as Still Stanford said, it Portland at its playgrounds.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's just stunning to me, you know, looking at the sense of, well, Portland, we can't do what we want to do.
Yeah.
You guys voted for it.
Yeah.
The rest of the state, all those conservatives said, you're nuts.
Yeah. And when I go to Salem and talk, you know, and I talk to legislators about steep slopes, land use planning, issues dealing with or with SIPs and how we're giving the money away. It's the Republican conservatives from Grants Pass that hear me.
Oh yeah.
They get it because they realize they're not getting any of this benefit. Washington County's getting the benefit. And they hate Washington County.
Yeah.
And they hate Portland because you guys are sucking the blood out of us.
Yeah.
And we get the drippings.
Yeah.
And when I make that point they say, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when I talk to Tobias Reed, good luck.
Yeah.
There's no conversation.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm really going to explore with Vic is he has some really interesting observations about single and multiple member districts because he was half his legislative career in multiple and then half in single. And from his point of view, when they went to single, voters acted differently and elected officials acted very differently. You got parochialism.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have to represent, in his case, the dairy farmers and the intels.
Right.
You just did
intel.
The intel.
Yeah.
And so this, I'm going to be looking carefully at the political science literature to see if anybody's really explored that.
Yeah.
I don't think they have, but
it's a
very interesting observation.
Yeah, it is an interesting observation. Now, Blessa Coyne was a state rep during that era.
Because 70 is the change. 72, I think, is the first
election. I don't know whether Les would be willing to be interviewed. My sense of him is that he's not willing.
Uh-huh.
But, on that issue, that'd be a fascinating issue to discuss with him because he was at that transition point.
Yeah, when I talked to Bob Smith, same thing.
Yeah.
Jim Redden was around those days, too.
Yeah.
So, there's several of them that are around.
Somebody who was around would be, I think that'd be, that's an interesting observation. And I think, I never I came here after I got here after that system had been replaced, so I never experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember whether that's the way things were when I grew up in Roseburg in Douglas County. I don't think they were. But
yeah, I don't
may
know
be
how
wrong
it was. But it's all the 67th Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said one person, one vote.
Yeah, yeah.
So off you go.
Yeah.
So tell me how you got this amazing medal.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think.
We got pictures of you from the party.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
well,
yeah,
pictures,
well, that was,
this
that was,
medal. This
yeah,
makes it
yeah,
into the book.
Yeah.
We got the pictures of
yeah,
you and the medal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you and the medal and Vic shaking
yeah,
hands too.
Right. No, I had it on. I don't wear it. Yeah.
It's like wearing a breastplate.
Yeah, it is. It's heavy. It's. Well, when Vic was governor, he had that medal commissioned,
mm-hmm.
and so at some point, and it was well after he was governor, it's when he became a member of the Board of Trustees here. I was at some social gathering, and I'm trying to remember how that happened. It seems to me he was. I saw it, or he showed it to me, and then I said, "God, that is beautiful." I didn't know you had that commissioned.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, that'd be really nice to have one of those, in my treasure trove of memorabilia. And the next time I saw him, I don't remember where it was. He gave it to me.
Hmm.
And then, I'm not giving you a very good, clear answer, but because I don't remember. But I think it was one of those situations where, you know, I saw him out here, and I knew that it existed because I'd seen a copy of it somewhere, maybe something he showed me. And what's nice about now the original one had the symbol of the state of Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and the saying,
mm-hmm.
"She flies by her wings." Okay. The back of it that I got originally was blank. Just
mm-hmm.
had, I think, Vicky on the back of it,
mm-hmm.
and the date. But when, at some point, since Joe's story and I were connected by the Story Dondero
mm-hmm.
Award given to us by Paul and Nancy Phillips, the money financed by Paul and Nancy Phillips in that award, I said, "Well, Joe, I'm going to give you my medal because we sort of share this common link
mm-hmm.
to Vic
mm-hmm.
and to Paul,
mm-hmm.
and I said because I've got another version of it,
mm-hmm.
which I did by that mm-hmm. time, and that version." Which Vic sent me in this beautiful little case, which is sitting on the top of above my computer on the shelf, has also the Territorial Medal of the State of Oregon on the back.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the real McCoy.
Yeah.
But I think it just happened because of serendipitous circumstances. Where somewhere I saw it. He said, "Well, I need to get you one of those."
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it happened. I think I need you to get me one of those. And I said, "Well, that would be very lovely,
mm-hmm.
and I'd be very appreciative."
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I explained to him that I had given the medal to a friend, a colleague at Pacific, because we sort of share this connection to you,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "Well, I'll get you the original one because it has the territorial sign on it." So, again, it's just he's a nice person.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think this happened just serendipitously.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal about
mm-hmm.
it. And more importantly is he did it. You know, he could have just forgotten about it, and I would have forgotten about it, and
right.
I would have, you know, been fine. But he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, that's just who he is.
Yeah.
He keeps his, if he makes a promise, he keeps it.
Yeah.
And there's a lovely note attached to it. And, I think that's the story, as far as I recall it.
Mm. It's great.
Yeah, it is. And it's actually, I mean, I treasure it. It's the most valuable piece of Oregon history I have.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the several bills that I helped pass in the legislature that I've got in my office,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But that medal is, and that, of course, with that is now the picture of Vic and me
yeah.
at the ceremony, which
yeah.
I love. It's a special place. And the funny thing about it is that I know, when Paul sees me and talks with me with students, says, you know, I don't know what you're getting out of this Marxist professor, but, you know, so he's always doing that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And and apparently, you know, when you guys had lunch, Paul said, yeah, that Marxist professor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, oh, God, now I'm really going to be toast with Vic. Vic never mentions it, never goes there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my Steve Dean, when he was still covering the legislature, after he left the Trailblazer thing, caught me one time. He said, Paul Phillips says you're a Marxist. And I said, Steve, look, I had Paul as a student. He wouldn't know the difference between Groucho, Karl, or Harpo. And that pretty much closed the discussion. But I did have the bad habit early in my career of saying, as a Marxist.
Yeah.
And if the truth is told, the more I see the economy going the way it's going, the more I go back to, you know, what Marx says in terms
mm-hmm.
of his economic analysis. His politics were blindly stupid,
mm-hmm.
but his analysis, I think, of capitalism is still right on.
Yeah, there's a piece in the New Yorker, maybe 92, 93, 94. About that says, you know, Marx, the ideas, his solutions may have been kind of weird,
mm-hmm.
but man, he pegged it down
yeah.
totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me see if I've got.
And when you, if you read the Communist Manifesto toward the end.
Yeah, here we go. The Return of Karl Marx, John Cassidy, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, after all, he did write for the New York Herald Tribune, as I recall.
Exactly.
You know? So he knew. Even though he never visited the United States, I don't think.
I don't think he did either.
He certainly understood something about the economy. But you know, when early in your life, in your academic, early in my political life, I was more than willing to use that label, but I learned through the hard lessons of losing tenure back east that maybe you shouldn't do that to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came out here, and I would generally, I said that early on occasion in some classes, but I was sort of testing to see whether they were paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you pushed me, yeah, I'm a Marxist, damn
mm-hmm.
right. So I think, you know, so was Madison and a lot of other people who looked at the basic fault lines of economics in this country and realized that, yeah, class is an enduring
mm-hmm.
Political dynamic in the society, and until, as long as you have the haves and have-nots, it's going to be that way. But that's what government is to do, is to
yeah.
even out those
yeah.
those conflicts. And that's what we've lost. We've lost that. I mean, we now have a 1% who feel they're privileged
mm-hmm.
beyond all measure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's gone. It's
mm-hmm.
gone further. But so... Yeah, it's, you know, I think, you know, at times I wish I'd never used the label, but then again, why not?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the privileges of being an academic.
Exactly.
you can label yourself and then run away from it.
Exactly.
And then you ultimately have to be accountable for it.
Yep, yep. One of the things, Vic did most of the oral history with the Historical Society, 92, 93, mm-hmm. but then he asked for the same guy to come back in 98.
Mm-hmm.
He said, there's some things I want to make sure that I get down here.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say anything new.
Yeah.
Nothing new. Mm-hmm. We knew exactly what you felt about this, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I think there's one thing I have to explore, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that comes out in 98 is he feels a lot of decisions that he made and ways that he was taking the state
mm-hmm.
Prevented us from going to socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's,
mm-hmm.
it's not in the earlier stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything
mm-hmm.
that I talked
mm-hmm.
to him about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to, you know, what did he mean by
mm-hmm.
that in 98?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 98.
I don't know. So to look at maybe, you know, response to the Clinton healthcare thing. Or,
well, it could be. Sure.
You know, who knows?
Sure.
Who knows what it is?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's out of character. He doesn't use those labels.
No, he does. No, I don't remember those labels. Although during the campaign against Ted, there was that implication. I don't think they ever
mm-hmm.
used that.
No.
There was that implication that he's not one of us. He's
well, in 82, there's people who were alive and thriving at that point who remember that union was the Wobblies.
Yeah.
So,
you
know, it's world federalism.
Yeah.
It's not cases taking over your timber.
Right.
It's all
right.
that stuff.
Yeah, and at a certain point, I think, you know, Vic, you know, like, my dad lived through the Great Depression, so you know he probably had some sense of how the world, you know, is sort of historically has been divided between two different visions
mm-hmm.
of how to organize society. One perpetrated by Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin, and the other perpetrated by the Founding Fathers
mm-hmm.
and. So at some level, you know, he may feel there may be a deep sense of, there's a certain divide.
Mm-hmm.
And Clinton is coming too close to it, you know,
yeah.
spending too much. And certainly given Hillary's role in healthcare, even though there's nothing socialistic about that at all. It's
every other developed country in the world.
But it may come down to just the fact that Vic is a an Oregonian.
Well, he's an American politician.
Who's an American politician for whom socialism is a dirty word.
Yeah, and for all his international stuff, really good on the economics. But it's never clear to me that he understands the government systems.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up totally upfront. The 92-93 interviews ask him some great questions about
mm-hmm.
culture.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic has got great answers.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't drink a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I tried it once when I was in Asia,
yeah.
and I woke up like 15 hours later saying, what the hell did I do?
That's just vintage.
It's that stuff, but that also is you're always in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
The empathy is not necessarily there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't elect people
with
that kind of
interaction. I think part of I wonder. I get this is speculation, and
mm-hmm.
you may get a better sense of it as you go on this project. I wonder what part of that anti-socialism and sort of deaf ear to the other world isn't because he's an immigrant.
Yeah. And one thing I...
And an Arab.
Yeah.
I mean.
And I know nothing about the Arab immigrant community
mm-hmm.
in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to look at them. Are they the traditional Democrats when they get here turning into Republicans?
Yeah.
His dad was a Republican,
mm-hmm.
Which seems to me first-generation people generally don't make that switch.
That's right.
So was he a businessman first, Arab immigrant second?
Yeah.
So there's a real dynamic there.
Yeah. But I think part of it, too... maybe that you may discover if you look in the family tree closely enough, which you should be able to do, I hope, with family art records and stuff.
I've already got an ancestry.com
you know,
going. I have the the shipping manifest with young Vic at age six coming back into the United States after going to visit the family in Syria.
Yeah. So here's here's a family from Syria. Now, what time did they come over? 19 what?
The parents got here in 1900, 1901.
Okay, my father's parents got here in 1906 from Italy. From
so same era.
From Genoa. And I, but I have a, you know, so the, what was the politics of Syria and Lebanon like?
Well, at that point, it was thought of the Ottoman Empire.
There
was no Syria. There was no Lebanon.
That's right. Okay.
It was Damascus.
Yeah.
They were in the Homs, Sultanate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to figure out what that thing. Mom lived here, which is basically the outskirts of Beirut.
Okay.
And Dad lived here, basically the outskirts of Homs.
Okay.
20 miles apart.
Yeah.
Now there's a line between them.
Arranged marriage.
Now it's, I don't know if it was arranged or not, but there's
yeah.
Yeah.
That would be really interesting because.
And Christian.
Yeah.
The yeah. Where Vic's dad's family is from, there's still a Crusader castle up on the
really?
Hill. The
really?
Town exists
yeah.
as the place that took yeah. care of the castle.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know. I mean, Vic went to the castle.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing my own research, I found out that's why the town exists. So there's some really intriguing things there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think somehow the son of an immigrant child coming to Oregon, which has no sense of, is an all-white Anglo state.
Yeah.
You know, it would be interesting to know. I assume he went to public schools in Portland or Tumwater.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. He yeah.
So
yeah,
I
grew up in all that Lloyd Center area that
yeah,
no longer
okay.
exists.
So I guess the question I would have is, to what degree was his image of himself shaped by his immigrant heritage or
right.
by the desire for so many immigrants to become Americanized in that next generation,
yeah,
which
exactly.
he would have been. You would have been sort of that cutting edge.
And Dad is born 1885. The one who got him over here was older uncle, mm-hmm. Aziz, who's born 1878.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's always the one who was kind of in charge.
Yeah.
And so the dad had the business here. Aziz was in New York doing the actual importing and export.
Interesting.
And then eventually moved out here.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
The Ottoman Empire would not have been a very good crucible for developing a sense of democratic life.
No.
Civic culture.
No.
It would have been more of a process of, well, here's the people you need to deal with if you're in business, and these are the rules, the unwritten rules, whatever they were at the time, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know in my dad's case, they arrive in Little Italy, in Greenwich Village, and then within a matter of a few years, they come out to Seattle, and in the process, my grandmother and my grandfather separate,
mm-hmm.
which is very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Had to be incredibly traumatic. but so the Italian who moves his family, my dad and his two younger brothers to Seattle, eventually remarries. How that happens, I don't know because I don't know how you get an annulment in that era.
Yeah.
But they must have figured it out. But, they all became, the brothers became solid Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of Catholic Italians who stayed back east were Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Kind of dependent of what city you ended
yeah.
in and what the machine
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
yeah.
But I remember when I was at Whitman, my professor took us, we had a seminar on state and local government, and the culmination was going to Olympia
mm-hmm.
to see the legislature, and we got a chance to meet with Dan Evans as a mm-hmm. newly minted minority leader
yeah.
who was as impressive as hell.
Yeah.
You knew this guy was going to be somebody. Yeah, obviously it was. And then we got to meet with Governor Rossellini. Well, you know, we're in the governor's office around this big table, and my professor is Bob Fluno, Italian-American mm-hmm. professor. We all introduce ourselves, and when I introduced, the governor said, "Oh, I know your dad." I'm sitting there. I didn't say anything. I said, "How do you know my dad?" I'm thinking, you know, my dad is in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally figured out he knew my Uncle Perry, who was mm-hmm. very politically active. But I never said anything to
yeah.
him. I just went with the flow.
Yeah.
But so yeah, there's got to be some interesting backstories to how Vic was shaped
mm-hmm.
in it by his early childhood schooling experience, by his family experience, and at some point he must have felt, I have to make a choice. I'm an Oregonian or an Arab American.
Yeah, and I don't know if he ever consciously made that
yeah.
choice. To him, he was always an American.
Yeah.
Always, always,
yeah.
always.
Yeah.
But, you know, Edward's the only one who's left now, and I don't know how talkable he is.
Mm-hmm.
But there have to be stories of the generation ahead
mm-hmm.
of them
mm-hmm.
making that
yeah.
choice.
Yeah.
There's, you can see that some of them that are Vic's generation, but because the other uncle was older,
mm-hmm.
so they're born 10, 15
mm-hmm.
years ahead,
mm-hmm.
are born like Aziz mm-hmm. and then turn into Andrew
mm-hmm.
very quickly. And
yeah.
so there's
well,
very quick
yeah,
changes
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when I didn't find out my dad's real name until he died.
mm-hmm.
My dad was Charles Albert Don Darrell
mm-hmm.
all of my life.
Mm-hmm.
No. His given name was Carlos Alberto Dondero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, there, and when I got my dad's billfold, he had an updated Italian Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Sons of Italy.
Yeah.
Card. Sons of, and my and my dad never went there.
Yeah.
I was not raised in a Catholic. I never went to a Catholic church. Uh-huh. I was raised in a Congregational church. I only went to a Catholic church when I was in graduate school visiting my Uncle Fred and Aunt Florence over a summer in 66, and I said, it's about time I go to a Catholic church. So
mm-hmm.
Aunt Florence took me to her Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of my family tree was never part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
The Italian part was,
mm-hmm.
but it was very, you know, amorphous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then to find out your dad's real name is Carlos Alberto Dondero,
mm-hmm.
and that he had an updated Sons of Italy card, that told me something about my dad that I didn't know.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and then, of course, he would walk in at Thanksgiving. I couldn't go home from Whitman to Roseburg. That was too long. So I'd go
mm-hmm.
to Seattle, and my dad would be mm-hmm. up with my uncle. And they would, my aunt and uncle would invite Italian friends over for Thanksgiving dinner, who my dad grew up with. And suddenly they'd be in the other living room yakking in Italian,
mm-hmm.
including my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that my dad could speak Italian.
Yeah.
So again, there's got to be, you know,
yeah.
there's got to be another side.
Yep, because Vic knows no words of Arabic.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he knows two of them or something.
Yeah, he speaks Arabic like Anne speaks Japanese,
yeah.
food only.
Exactly, yeah. He doesn't speak any Arabic.
Yeah.
And funny, Dolores loved to, she didn't graduate from college, neither
mm-hmm.
of them graduated,
mm-hmm.
but... she would have been a home ec person.
Mm-hmm.
She loved experimental cooking, international
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Vic's just meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no hummus in there. There's no kefta. There's no nothing.
Yeah. Somehow that doesn't surprise
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. You know, I think she was kind of disappointed that
yeah.
she cooked this and I wouldn't eat it. So
yeah. 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 I don't think I've given you very much.
No, you're great. And as I get into this, one of the things that the very first time I interviewed him in December, he spent the first 10 minutes saying how excited he was about this. Mm-hmm. And this is your project, mm-hmm. not project. I'm going to give you my point of view, mm-hmm. you know, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But for this book to stand the test of time, like the McCall book, mm-hmm. It's got to be he's a person of his times. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so if I need it, I'm going to be coming back to you for mm-hmm. your sense of mm-hmm. what was the mm-hmm. late 70s, mm-hmm. mid-80s mm-hmm. like in terms of sure. context.
Yeah.
One thing that's a positive and a negative is he's governor exactly when I leave the state, and he leaves the governorship 3 years before I move back to
okay.
the state.
Okay.
So my personal,
yeah.
you know, I'm living in Vermont,
yeah,
going
sure.
to school in California
sure.
and all,
sure.
in Indiana, in Illinois and
yeah.
stuff. So, you know, it's kind of on the radar, but not
yeah.
much.
Yeah, that's sort of like when I was out of state when McCall was governor.
yeah.
And people used to ask me when all the things were going on that was putting Tom on the radar map.
Yeah.
In the next 10 years, what is about your state that you know your governor says, come visit but don't stay?
Right.
And I was known as the Oregonian.
Right.
I was the weirdo.
yeah.
Dickinson College, Carlisle, Pennsylvania. You know their concept of West is Ohio.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
You know, I mean.
When I was in Vermont, they talk about going west, and what they were doing is talking about going to Albany.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, no.
Yeah. So yeah, I would have to try to explain from afar my home state.
Yeah.
But at a certain level, you know, I was at a severe disadvantage because I wasn't here to
yeah.
follow it that closely. But
yeah.
subsequently, you know, I did. And, but Vic. Well, if I can be of any help down the road, because I was around.
Yeah.
But my memory haphazard at times, so.
Well, in these projects, because, you know, it is memory is an issue.
But what I have to do, what I would do next time is Google the TIA years and remind myself all the things I've forgotten, and it will come back.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I've been sick with bronchitis the last 2 weeks, and I'm still on meds, so.
Yeah.
But I'm not catchable, but.
That's good.
I just
keep your Ebola and your bronchitis
My granddaughter just shares her germs.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah, that's
what they
do.
Great.
Okay.
So.
Oh.